today. He has another commitment. So it is 3:01. I'm going to bring the Land Use Committee meeting to order. Present, I see Councilman Smiley, Councilwoman Diller, Councilman Sheldon, Councilman Cartier, Councilman Carter, President Hartley Nagel, Councilwoman Durham, Councilman Hollins, Councilman Tackett. I see Councilman Street. Did I miss anybody?
Okay. No, just Bell and Woods arrived right now.
So we do have a quorum. So I need a motion to accept the minutes of June 2nd.
Motion to approve the minutes as provided.
Second.
Any opposed? Okay, we'll move on to discussion of resolutions. I don't have a number on this, but plan of Blackstone Cove, Appaquinimic 100, west side of Summit Bridge Road, approximately 2,000 feet from south of Knoxontown Road. Major land development plan that proposes to subdivide parcel 14006-00012 to create 14 single family dwelling lots, SR zoning. Application number 2016-0233, Council District Number 6, Mr. Carter.
Yeah, this is Blackstone Cove. It's a small, well, relatively small development by our standards for 14 homes. It's on the edge of, literally on the middle town, kind of a transition between the town and some of the housing we have there and the rural area. It is an open space plan. So it's all 1 acre and a little bit over 2 acre lots. You know, they have gone to quite a bit of extent to deal with some of the constraints, the recharge area and some of the other stuff. And I don't know if do we have the applicant ready to talk about it a little bit?
I don't know. Tara or Nellie, do you know?
I don't know whether that's Jeff or whether they just wanted me to cover it.
Zach and Jeff, we're here.
Did you have a presentation? Yes, obviously you do, since I see it now. Thank you. And Jeff, do you want to take it from here?
Zach's going to start off, and then I'm going to take care of the engineering side.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Blackstone Cove, we've worked on this.
Give your full name prior to the...
Zachary Pierce with Landmark Homes and Blackstone Cove LLC. We started this project a long time back. It's really just a small project outside of Middletown, 14 lot, basically open space subdivision with 14 lots. It's going to be a gated community with larger homes, which really the Middletown corridor has just been flooded with all the smaller housing, and there is a need for larger lots out there, and that was our vision for this 40 acre site. So it's really just 14 lots, bigger 5,000 square foot homes and up. And it'll have nice landscaping around the whole bordering of the property, along with berms, their front Summit Bridge, along with like a nice like iron gate, across the whole frontage of the community to kind of give it a buffer from the 71 corridor there. And then I don't know if you guys can, I gave my presentation to you guys, so I don't know if you want to scroll through all the renderings of the house types and the plans themselves.
Okay, we're seeing them on the screen. I don't know if you want to comment as they go through them.
If you guys have any questions or concerns about the community, I mean, St. Andrews is across the street, and obviously we'll never, you know, nothing will ever happen. That's why we didn't want to do any kind of high density or anything out there. It's just, it's really rural and probably will always stay that way. Because of St. Andrews and where it's located, between Townsend and Middletown.
And I think if I'm correct, that this was the last major plan that was submitted prior to the moratorium, which is the reason that they have the ability to do 14 homes rather than five.
Correct. Yes.
Okay. I see Mr. Smiley's hand is up. I'm still on a split screen, so I can't see.
Yeah, I just have a point of clarification for me, because it was on the opening page. Each home will have its own individual well for water and an individual septic, correct?
Correct, sir.
Okay. I just want to make sure I was reading it as it is.
And we actually agreed to go to an additional, I think, 100 feet lower, so we didn't affect the farmers around the area where they were doing, they were tapping into certain aquifers for irrigation and those sort of things when we went to
Before Rapidic, because we are in a WRPA recharge zone, and we're disturbing more than the 50% in order to accommodate the drainage way and other features in there. And however, our impervious was less than the 20%, and the farmer next door asked us, Mr. Wicks, his wells are down about 70 feet and he has two of them, and he tends to run low on water. So he requested that our wells be below 100 feet, which I think we're about going to be going to about 150, so that it doesn't affect his water supply.
Okay. Mr. Carter, I saw your hand up, I believe.
Yeah, just a couple of things. I don't know that you guys need a gate down there, to be honest with you. But if you are going to do something like that, I hope you will at least make it blend and look similar to like the gate entrance to St. Andrew's School, which is just a little bit up Knoxon Town Road. The other thing I did want to, I was looking at the engineering and drainage for the recharge, and I'm trying to get a feel of how much of that runoff, even with the low impervious, will be able to infiltrate there, largely because at the bottom of the hill there, 4518 Summit Bridge Road, with some other changes that happened in the area for the first time in almost 50 years, in the last couple of years, he's had his first floor flooded as it comes down that stream. So I just was kind of, if you could talk a little bit about, you know, how much of the stormwater you're going to capture. I know this is small, but we do have that concern in the area, and it is affecting a nearby residents.
If we could change to the plan that shows the grading. So all the lots above the Witherspoon Way, which is the one that runs north to south or left to right across your screen, all those are being captured and piped over into a drainage swale that goes down into an infiltration basin that is on the east side or above the drainage way that we are protecting, if you will. We've realigned it, but we're protecting it. The four lots on the cul-de-sac will drain across and into the drainage way. Our post-development runoff on this site is less than pre-development, even without the infiltration, because we're going from an agricultural use, which has a higher runoff than the residential lots, and then the rest is all going to be meadow.
Okay. Yeah, I was wondering if you're going to have less than that. I know the nutrient load will be less.
Right. And then the drainage
septics, are the septics shown on there? Is that a septic in a reserve, or is that dual septic systems, it looks like?
That was, I believe, a septic and reserve. That was put on there way back in 2016 when we originally started this.
Okay.
The drainage way is at a 1% slope, so it'll keep the flows down. There is the farm to the south of us, the Wicks farm, which was the on the right-hand side of this plan. It drained, part of it drains across and into this drainage way. So we were asked by the county to accommodate that without affecting our stormwater and our site. There's also an 18-inch culvert pipe that runs under 71 from the St. Andrews property,
yep,
which doesn't seem to get any drainage through it, but just in case, we've created a swale that runs down along the property to the east, or to the south, or to the right-hand side of all our lots, and then underneath where the cul-de-sac is and into that drainage way. So it's going to follow pretty much the natural drainage flow down into the lower area, which is a conservation easement, which is also going to be improved by the developer because somebody had been using it as dirt bike trails.
Yeah, I had that in Odessa last night too. Any thought to how much meadow you're having versus reforesting it? Meadows are pretty hard to maintain.
We're adding more reforestation than is required.
Okay.
But of course, underneath that is going to be meadow. We're going to go in there. The first thing we're going to do is bulk grade this and get the meadow planted as a request from the land use, because they would like two growing seasons before we before we open up that drainage way.
Yeah. And for your landscaping, have you thought about caging off your trees?
I have not, because I didn't do the landscaping. Okay. But I'm sure they'll accommodate them to protect them as best they can.
Yeah, because you've got a in that pine, that's cove of pine trees across the road, directly across the street, you have a herd of about 50 deer that come out on the corner every night.
Okay.
So when you try and plant trees, trying to establish your trees here is going to be really difficult. And I know that when we worked with St. Andrews trying to do reforestation, the first three tries failed because the deer ate everything down to the ground. So anything they can get from their hind feet will not last unless you cage it.
Okay.
What do you say?
Okay.
It won't last.
Any other comments from council? Questions? I don't see any hands, but I'm not, everybody's not on one screen. Oh, President Hartley-Nagel, I'm sorry.
Yes, have you heard anything from the residents in the area?
I don't believe we've heard anything. We did reach out to them early on in this process, and nothing came back. Our original design was not to connect with Deep Branch, because of the difference in homes and communities that are going to be there. But the county requested that we tie that in to Deep Branch and put a cul-de-sac on the other side for future development.
Thank you very much.
Any other questions?
I just wanted to point that the tie-in.
Mr. Carter?
I'm sorry. The tie-in will keep it consistent with what Middletown has done with other communities. And it's a good precedent to keep and hold down here. And the only, I did try and reach out to some of the landowners as well. And the only person I heard from was the one down at the bottom of the hill there. I think it's 4518 Stone Brick Road with a flooding, but I will, I'll share with him that the runoff should be less post development than it was when it was agriculture, which I don't know if that's going to solve his problem, but at least shows that we're not going to make it worse.
Any other comments or questions? Mr. Woods, is your hand up or are you just adjusting your screen?
No, I just got in. I'm sorry. I'm having trouble with my computer. So.
Okay, so Mr. Woods is also present now. All right, if there's no other questions, or and Mr. Bell, I see, is now here.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
If there's no other questions, Mr. Pierce, thank you so much for the presentation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we will move on to, oh, is there any public comment? Somehow on Zoom, I forget public comment. Tara, any public comment that you see?
No public comment.
Thank you. We'll move on to 19009, ordinance revised zoning map, White Clay Creek 100, east side of North Old Baltimore Pike, directly across from Browns Lane, 0 North Old Baltimore Pike. Tax parcel number 09030001110, 12.97 acres from NC21 Neighborhood Conservation to ST Suburban Transition. Mr. Woods.
Her title.
There you go.
It's Ms. Scott.
Yes. Yes, Councilwoman.
All right. So Ms. Scott is doing the presentation, Mr. Woods. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. He's a little hard to hear. All right. Ms. Scott, thank you.
Thank you. And I believe we have a PowerPoint as well. Okay. Coming up.
She's putting it on.
Great. Thank you very much. So this project is just, if we could go to slide 2, that would be great. Thank you. This project is shown on the right-hand side. It indicates site plan. It's just shy of 14 acres in size, located along the east side of Old Baltimore Pike. It is currently zoned NC21. We are requesting a rezoning to ST. We are proposing 24 townhouse units for this site. And as you can see, it's located in the vicinity of other residential and commercial development in and around the area. If we could go to the next slide. This is the plan that had been approved previously. This plan was actually approved by council in 2013. It was to rezone the property to ST for 27 townhouse lots, along with a variance to provide the cul-de-sac access. Unfortunately, this plan sunsetted because subsequent to its approval, the economy went a little bit sideways, and my client was not able to build the project, so unfortunately, the plan sunsetted. So if we could see the next slide. This is an overlay of the current plan. Overlay on top of a aerial photograph of the site and the area in question. So as I mentioned, this project actually has 3 less townhouse units than what had been approved previously. It also has the same cul-de-sac street. We came before council for variances to provide the cul-de-sac as proposed, and that was approved by council back in March. Obviously, this plan will comply with all the current stormwater management requirements. We're also proposing that there is a private lane to the west of our site, known as Patterson Lane, which will tie into the proposed Eagle Hunt Lane for our subdivision, so that it will have a full access, full entrance, as approved by DLDOT on Old Baltimore Pike. If we could see, and as I said, the variances had been granted. So the next slide actually shows the current plan. As I said, substantially similar to the plan that had been approved previously, except for the fact that it actually has 3 less townhouse lots than proposed before. The next slide. So for purposes of the rezoning, here is a map of zoning in and around the area. You can see our site located sort of in the middle of the map, shown in brown. Immediately to the north of our site is property zoned ST, and also north and to on the opposite side of Old Baltimore Pike is property zoned ST as well, that has been developed with the Emblem Apartment Complex. And as I said before, there is other zoning directly across the street, NC6.5. And other zoning in and around us. So if I could have the next slide. um, These are the standards for the rezoning that the code requires that we look at, the first being consistency with the comprehensive development plan. The comprehensive plan shows this particular area as proposed for medium density residential development, 3 to 9 dwelling units per acre. The proposed development will actually have less density than that, approximately 1.86 dwelling units per acre. So it's more than consistent with what's required by the comprehensive development plan. Another standard is consistency with the character of the neighborhood. The area in question does have a variety of housing types, single family residential, basically from the 1960s, 70s, and 80s, as well as townhouse units, condominiums further to the south of us, and the apartment complex to the north of us. So there are a variety of housing types in this area. And we believe that the townhouses proposed will be consistent with the variety of residential options available in the area. In terms of consistency with the zoning and use of nearby properties, as I said, the site does abut ST zone property to the north. And the neighborhoods that are around us, even though they're zoned NC 6.5 and other NC zonings, are actually medium density residential. So they are more than consistent with, actually denser than the density that we are proposing for our particular project. The next slide, please. Some photographs of the area to sort of put things in context. The top left-hand photo is actually immediately to the south of our site. The first building you can see sort of in the background is the Christina Community Center, and then right next to it is a single-family residential house. The slide in the middle shows another single-family house adjacent to the single-family house you saw in the first photo. On the other side of our property, the picture in the top right corner shows the cemetery that is located adjacent to our property on the northern side. And then down below the series of photographs, the bottom left is Edgebrook, which is across the street from us. That's zoned NC 6.5, but does have a significantly dense number of houses in that subdivision. There's also in the middle of the screen Emblem Apartments, which is up the street from us, right at the access of Road A that leads into Christiana Mall and Christiana Fashion Center. And then in the bottom right-hand corner is a picture of some of the historic sites that are in the Christiana Village area. So to give you a sense of kind of the surrounding area to this property. One of the other standards is the suitability of the property for the uses for which were proposed. The property is, you may recall from when we were before you in March, we talked about some of the protected resources on the property. There are wetlands, floodplains, some protected forested areas. We are not disturbing any of those areas for purposes of development. So we have contained the development so that it is not within the protected resource area. There is certainly more than adequate infrastructure to accommodate the 24 townhouses being proposed here. And the site is located along a roadway that does serve as a connector to a rather main thoroughfare in the area that provides access to shopping, entertainment, dining, and recreation uses. Next slide, please. And in terms of the effect on nearby properties, we would submit that we do not believe there is any negative impact. The development is going to be set back fairly significantly from Old Baltimore Pike, and there will be a fairly significant landscape screen along Old Baltimore Pike in front of the development. We also will be providing a much better and safer access for our neighbor, the Christina Community Center, who currently really has no approved site entrance onto Old Baltimore Pike. So we are tying them into our access way so that they can come out at the entrance to our development. And we will also, as part of that entrance, be providing a pull-off area for a bus and moving the bus stop to that pull-off area so there is a safer way to access transit in the area. And finally, the last part of the requirement in terms of the suitability of the zoning is the recommendation of the Department of Land Use. The department has recommended a conditional approval of the rezoning and plan, requiring that the dwelling units be generally consistent with the architectural renderings that we had provided, which you will see later in this presentation. Also, that the buffer yard opacity levels along Old Baltimore Pike would be consistent with architectural renderings we provided, which we will also show you. And that each of the townhouse units provide a tapered driveway in general conformance with parking location standards of Article 25, which we do agree to all of those requirements from the Department of Land Use. In terms, again, of the property and its location, it is located, per the Delaware State Strategies map, it is located in Investment Area 1, which is one of the areas where you're having more urbanized areas and higher density populations, and sufficient infrastructure is in place to accommodate additional development. This slide shows the proposed entrance onto Old Baltimore Pike. It shows the approximate tie-in from Patterson Lane into Eagle Hunt Road, so that there is safe access out to Old Baltimore Pike. It also shows the bus pull-off area that we're providing along the front of our entrance, so there's a safe access for the buses. And the on the left-hand side of this slide, you will see the existing sort of gravel access being provided to the community center, and also where the current bus stop is located, which will be moved down to the entrance of our site. We have had several meetings with the community. We met in June of 2019 with residents of the area and Councilman Woods to basically introduce the project. Hear their comments and address their concerns. We heard concerns about stormwater management and also about traffic. We did ask the community to provide us at the end of that meeting to provide us with a list of any other concerns that they may have that they would like us to address. We did not receive such a list. However, we did meet with them again at the end of July. And this time we had DelDOT at the meeting to respond to any of their questions or concerns about transportation issues in the area. And DelDOT talked about some of the projects they had in the area and also about additional signage that they were going to provide in connection with Eagle Run Road to help take traffic off of Old Baltimore Pike that would be going to and from both the Christiana Fashion Center as well as the Christiana Mall. And then lastly, we had a separate meeting in August with representatives of the Christina Community Center. When we started this project in the first meeting we had, they had asked us what we could do in connection with the community and the community center. And so we wanted to have a further meeting with them to talk about that. We did have a long meeting with them, and we had, I think, a fairly good discussion. And at the end of that conversation, we said, you know, tell us what it is you're looking for us to do for the community, and we will see how we can incorporate that into our plans. And we never did get any specifics from them after that meeting, and you will probably hear from them, but they do not support this project, although we have tried reaching out to them and talking to them about how we could improve the project to meet their concerns. Next slide. This is the architectural rendering that essentially would show the access from the Christina Community Center into Eagle Hunt Road and then would take it out to Old Baltimore Pike. So it really sort of is a snapshot showing what our site would look like from the community center with the landscaping that we would propose in connection with the project. Next slide. And this is the view of the project from Old Baltimore Pike, essentially from across the street along Old Baltimore Pike. Again, this is showing the access into the site, the turnoff that would provide access to the community center, the landscaping that is proposed in connection with the project, as well as it shows the basically the setback of the proposed houses from Old Baltimore Pike. Next slide. And this is the architectural rendering that we had shown at the planning board meeting, which is part of the conditional approval by the Department of Land Use. They wanted to make sure that we would actually be constructing what we had shown, and we said, of course, we were more than happy to do that. This is what we plan to build at this site. That's it for my formal presentation, but I'm certainly happy to answer any questions that council may have.
Thank you, Ms. Scott. Do we have any questions from council? Councilman Cartier.
Thank you, Chairwoman Kilpatrick. Ms. Scott, it was a very thorough presentation. It was very impressive. However, I did not hear anything about the requirement to comply the moderately priced dwelling unit program, which I think is, if we rezone it to ST, is a mandatory program. Can you comment on that?
We are not proposing, we do not need to comply with that requirement because of the size of the proposed development. And what we did with respect to this particular project, we learned after the last project that was approved that purchasers are looking for townhouses, but larger townhouse lots. And when we laid this site out with larger townhouse lots, that's why we ended up reducing the number of townhouses proposed in this particular community. So we don't meet the threshold that would require that we provide the moderately priced units for this particular application.
Any other questions from council members?
One follow-up, please.
Okay, thank you. Yes.
So what is that threshold?
What is the threshold, Bev?
25, mm-hmm. I believe.
25.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments from council?
Janet, I have some.
Okay, I'm sorry, Mr. Woods, I can't see you.
Yeah.
Mr. Woods.
Unfortunately, I can't put video on. I put video on and it disconnects me. So unfortunately, I'm on the road today.
Okay.
I just want to say this project, this is something that obviously had started years prior to myself getting on council. And then with the recession and everything that happened, this developer had to go back to the table. We did have the meetings with the communities. As all meetings, you had some members that were residential, that lived close, that were against the project, and some that were for it. And I've been up and down this road, and a lot of people question, you know, the access and the different things that happen with the speed on that road. And it is a road that's very busy. But looking at the proposal, I was, you know, drawn into that they lowered the capacity or changed the capacity of homes and lowered that number, and the access to the community center, which right now is basically off the road into the lawn. And I think this proposal is a good proposal even for that, to get people in and out of this site better. So, you know, as I said, some of the community down there really doesn't want to see this in that area, but I do think this is a good proposal of what has been placed forward at this time. And just wanted to kind of give the rest of the council my thoughts.
Thank you, Mr. Woods. Any other comments from council members? Mr. Street.
Well, this is just, you know, the will of council be the will of council, but the community center didn't give a list because the community center doesn't want it. That's been crystal clear from the inception. You know, it's small, but it's a historic Black community. Community center used to be a one-room school. And, you know, you've given them everything they've wanted so far. And my better judgment tells that will continue. But it's a significant part of African-American history in this county that, in my view, is purposely and intentionally being destroyed. But you've let them have their way so far. I don't doubt that will change, but that doesn't make it right. It doesn't make it fair.
Thank you, Mr. Street. Any other comments from council? My only comment is, in looking at this, I think that the bus pull-off is a fantastic idea, and I think that the county ought to look at requiring that type of thing for the entrance, at least to every development that is on a main road. I think that's a tremendous safety component to this. Mr. Hollins, did I see your hand up? You're muted.
I'm sorry, no.
Okay, I'm sorry. Anytime I see anything on Zoom, I'm what leery of. Okay, so any public comment on this, Tara?
No public comment.
All right, thank you. We will then move on to Ordinance 19120 to amend Newcastle County Code Chapter 40, Unified Development Code, Article 31, Procedures and Administration, Section 40-3.31.120, text amendments regarding certain proposed text amendments. Mr. Carter.
Yeah, thank you. And I'm going to share a few PowerPoint slides to give you a little bit more thorough overview. As some of you know, once I started on council, I took a long look at our history, our regular organization, why we were set up that way. And this was one of the points that really shocked me, that we had turned over this much of our legislative power as a requirement to submit to an executive branch as a mandatory and not a discretionary process. So I'm gonna go through that a little bit and then make a few comments. I did go through the report from land use. There are a couple of things there that I want to fill in a little bit more that I think may not accurately depict what occurred in the past with some legislation to change this. So let me see if I could share my screen. Let's see. That should give it to you, I think. Okay, so this is the legislation, and the question before us is here is, should the legislative branch be required to submit our legislation for a two-week review by the executive branch? And my argument and reason for this legislation is, I think it's fine, I think it's good, we should cooperate when we can, but I think it should be a discretionary decision in those cases when we may or may not agree or have some fresh ideas we want considered. We should have the authority of the legislature to do that. And I think that was the intent of the organization of Newcastle County when we were reorganized back in the 60s. So what does this ordinance actually do? As I mentioned, it changes 4031120, and it makes that pre-application review discretionary. I'll talk about in a minute. It still maintains the five formal plus however many informal opportunities for land use to have major input on any legislation, and it doesn't exclude any of us from working with land use. It just makes it discretionary at the council person's discretion. I think it does restore some of the intended checks and balances in the separation of power that was clearly called for when Newcastle County was restructured from levy court. It does increase public transparency. There is an argument that can be made that during those 2 weeks, you may overly constrain the thought without the public having a chance to know it's being discussed and weighed in. If it's introduced, much like the legislature does, and then you can actually discuss and amend it with that iterative process between the executive branch, the legislative branch, and with added public input. It does provide consistency for the rest of our legislation. We do important things for public safety, for the budget, for community services, none of which require this pre-filing requirement of 2 weeks to have it reviewed by the executive branch. And I think, in my view, when there are some differences, it does incentivize cooperation and compromise for better legislation. And I think sometimes a little bit of pluralism is helpful. A little bit of that debate is helpful to force us all on both sides of the argument to learn and to change and to compromise for better legislation. There are risks of not having this if we begin to limit innovation and policy improvements, because, you know, sometimes in agencies, it's the way we've always done it. So we like to snuff out competing and new ideas, because change is hard. And this is when we do feel as a legislator, we want to make some change in the UDC and land use, that can be curtailed in that 2-week period. Again, it can allow some public decisions, some pre-narrowing of the policy debate before the public is involved. I think it does undermine the separation of powers, keeping in mind that, you know, separation of powers is a scalable thing. It's not an all or nothing thing. There's an argument that it doesn't upset that in the joint report that was split. Of course, the planning board voted 8-1 in favor of this ordinance, and the administration has recommended its denial. But there are scales, and I think, you know, we can talk about where it falls on that scale. And it does give the executive branch sometimes the opportunity to derail legislation, or at least conceptual ideas for legislation, early on when there is differences of views. I want to step back and remind us all that the state code is pretty clear. All legislative powers of the county shall be vested in county council. Doesn't mean we don't work with our executive branches. It doesn't mean it's not acceptable for them to help us and write legislation, but it shouldn't be a pre-application requirement. It should be a discretionary decision as legislators of when we do want to work with them and want to use their help and when we don't. And this is really clear, and it was very clearly stated in our reorganization back in 1964, and a large part of why we are structured so differently from Kent and Sussex County, because they felt as a bigger county, the separation of powers was really important. And we seem to have kind of walked away with that, I think, probably buried under the bundle of papers in a giant omnibus bill in 1997 called the UDC. I remember being very involved back then. I don't ever remember this part about a pre-introduction review of legislation. I also want to remind you that this is a reorganization report, and that reorganization report did call for a sharp separation of powers. It does retain these 5 formal opportunities for input. And I think this is really important. You still have the opportunity discretionarily to work with the executive branch if you want before you put it in to fine tune it. But once you introduce it, you still go through the plus process. You still go through the planning board hearing. You still go through the planning board business meeting. And then we have our committee meetings, plus the informal opportunities we all have to talk together. So it doesn't cut out public input. It just cuts out that 2-week period before it's introduced. And that's all it really does. Okay. This is just, you guys are all familiar with the process. We don't know. I just wanted to lay out where those opportunities still exist through our process to guarantee there are 5 opportunities, many of them much more public, for input from the land use side of things from the executive branch. And just to summarize, it makes it discretionary for a council member to submit legislation to the Department of Land Use review before you introduce it. You're still welcome to do that under this ordinance. It's just not a mandatory requirement. It retains our independence and our statutory powers to legislate that were apparently given away in 1997 for reasons, you know, I guess because people thought it was complexity or something. But prior to that, for the history of this county, it was a legislative process. It treats land use legislation consistently with the process we use for all other legislation. Again, you informally work with the executive branch, but you're not required to submit it. It does honor the sharp separation of powers principle that was a centerpiece of the reorganization and structuring of our government in 1960s when it was reorganized. I believe it makes it much more transparent because the public knows that legislation has been introduced, has an opportunity to try and follow what's going on informally or formally. It does retain all 5 formal public opportunities for the Department of Land Use, direct formal public input, as well as others, and I think this will provoke cooperation. So let me stop the share And that's what the ordinance is intended to do. I think it's really important that we do that. I do know that after the 97, in the report you'll read from Land Use, it talks about how there are some changes made by Rich Abbott and Weiner, as if they were all really good. That was clearly not the case. The legislation talks very openly about how the legislature of Newcastle County was constrained by this part of the UDC. They did try to bring it and pull it back some. I don't think nearly far enough. So I think it's important, and I do think we've stepped over a gradient, at least of uncomfort for me, of separation of powers with that's why I have the ordinance in front of us, and hopefully I can convince some of you to follow through on it. So I'll answer any questions you have of me.
Any questions from council members? President Hartley-Nagel.
What year did you say this was changed?
So it originally, the first time we turned over to have this legislative authority for land use being taken over and reviewed in addition by the Department of Land Use was with the UDC passage, which was back in 97. And then there was a small effort, I think was probably a compromise as far as they could get under the first Gordon administration to pull that back. I think it was in 99-08, a substitute ordinance that Rich Abbott and Bob Weiner put in. I don't think it was as far as they wanted to go, but it did pull back some.
Did they say why they originally did it? Was there any notes or anything?
The argument is if the UDC is so complicated that only land use can do it. I find that offensive, to be honest with you. I think I can read legislation and understand it. I am an elected legislator who the state law has set up to be a legislator. And while I, in most cases, would can and will and will use their expertise, there are times that I think we need change. And I want to have the option of putting that legislation in without having to go through and be required to submit something first through an executive branch agency.
Councilman Carter, can I get a copy of that? I believe you did a good job, and I want to look into it a little more.
Sure.
You can then I want to get to the other side as well.
Can we have one at a time, please? I'm sorry. Ms. Hartley-Nagel, would you finish your statement, and then Mr. Carter can respond?
Yeah, I think that you did an excellent job at presenting this, but I also, as we try to do in everything, get both sides, and so I want to look at the other side, too.
Sure.
You know, the best way to make a decision one way or another. But so I'm asking if you'll be able to send it to myself or, you know, if other council members want it, you know, they can also ask.
I guess I could speak. I'm not sure.
Mr. Carter.
I will send my presentation to all council. It was the same one I gave to the planning board. I will send my written testimony that I presented to the planning board to all of you. And I can send you the 5-minute clip where the chair of the planning board gave a probably a better summary of this argument than I could have based on her 22 years as a legislator in effect, that she never heard of this in any legislative process based on her 22 years as a legislator. So I will send you all three of those. And if you don't care, if other council members don't have an interest, you can just hit the delete key.
Thank you.
Any other comments from council members? I have Mr. Carter and Mr. Hollins, or Cartier, I'm sorry, and Hollins. Mr.
Yes.
Cartier.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chairwoman. I want to reflect on a couple of things. I know that when Councilman Carter was elected, he did extensive research on the founding documents of the reformed county government from the 1960s. I got to respect all of his due diligence and background research. And I've often felt in many respects, county council surrenders its legislative authority. This is one area where it was surrendered. There's another area where it was surrendered when it comes to confirming the county attorney, which was done by state legislation. So I applaud his effort. And again, I respect the kind of nuanced kind of viewpoint he has. It doesn't preclude council members from working with the department prior to submission of legislation, but it does go back to the fact that, you know, we do have the legislative authority under state code. So, in fact, this legislation, if I could get a little into the weeds a little bit, probably violates the state law regarding our legislative authority. So if we don't challenge this and take it back, nobody else is going to do that for us. So I think Councilman Carter's done us a great service with this, and I look forward after further review. I'm tending to be very supportive of this for next Tuesday's council session.
Mr. Hollins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to congratulate Councilman Carter for his due diligence and taking the time that he has taken to really invest and bringing these ideas to light for council's consideration. I was there in here rather in 1997 when the UDC was adopted, and it was quite an omnibus package. I don't think anyone on council at that time actually went through page by page to really review all of what the UDC encumbered. It was a masterpiece of legislation, but I'm also convinced as time go on that it was actually done by the authority of the county executive. Even though county council approved the moratorium, it was the county exec that really put this all together. And as time go on, we realize that there has been encroachment on the authority of the legislative branch, which doesn't surprise me. I was also there when Rich Abbott made the noble effort to try to make some corrections to correct this issue. And quite frankly, Rich Abbott was pretty much demonized by the executive branch at that time for trying to do what I believe was the right thing to do. I also agree that legislative privilege is one of the few that we have, and it should be sacred to legislators. That's the primary thing that we do. And to have this encroachment on the primary function of a co-equal branch of government, in my opinion, is just not acceptable. I cannot find a single good reason why we would continue down this path where there should be a pre-introductory submission from a legislative branch to the executive branch. And I would agree with the chair of the planning board. As you all know, former Senator Karen Peterson, before she became a state senator, was on the county council. Not only was she a member, but she also served as president of the county council. And she, like I, to recognize something like this is continuing to be in our code in any form or fashion should be corrected. But those members of council who feel that they are, to whatever degree, blindly loyal to the executive branch or to land use or any other department, they still have the option to remain that loyalty. But for those of us who want to have a degree of independence as a co-equal branch of government, please allow us to have that and don't hamstring those of us who feel that this is a serious encroachment on the legislative branch of government. It's something I just can't imagine any legislative body knowingly would submit to. So I support this legislation. I look forward to voting for it. And again, I want to congratulate Councilman Carter for all the time I've been on county council for 30 years there, as you all know, that these types of things do exist. They have some effort to correct them, but there's always been, and will probably always continue to be, pushback from the executive branch because they see it as an advantage. The fact of the matter is the county exec has veto power. That's the county exec's power alone. So if there's some legislation that comes through and he vetoes it, 10 times out of 10, it's going to remain vetoed. Once we did it, and that was on the increase for the legislative staff, most cases it's not going to happen. So there's no reason for the executive branch to have veto power at the end of the process and then have impediment power in the beginning. So I support Councilman Carter, and hopefully enough council members will see the merits of what he has done and the merits of what it means to those of us who want to be independent of the executive branch of government. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments from council members? Seeing none, Mr. Woods, you're okay. I can't see you. Any public comment, Tara?
Yes.
Yeah, Rich Hall wants to speak.
Okay.
I just promoted him to panelist, so he should be joining.
Okay. Mr. Hall?
Yeah, okay. Can you all hear me okay now?
Yes.
Okay, what I'd like to do is share my screen. I have a three slides and a PowerPoint. I'm just gonna skip to the last one. So I'll be brief because I don't wanna review what you guys already talked about. So let me do this if I may. Here we go. So good afternoon. For the record, Richard Hall, General Manager of Land Use. I am now going to get the PowerPoint up here really quickly. Okay, I'm gonna skip down to the last slide. Oops, sorry. There we go, sorry. All right, so the Department of Land Use poses this ordinance for a few reasons, but just to react to some of the things I heard, with all due respect to council, there is absolutely nothing in the current code that infringes, limits what county council can introduce to the UDC. Still today, you can introduce whatever you want. What the current code has in it, which this draft ordinance would seek to change, is a requirement for us to see it before it's introduced. However, it has no bearing on when it is introduced. I can't speak for ordinances and other departments, but I can tell you that oftentimes legislation for UDC, it does take a very close look, require a close look by my department, land use, law, and finance to review it. And to often what we have seen in the past is that provides an opportunity before something is introduced to perhaps rethink something, might suggest a different tact, might suggest, whether the ordinance will do what the council person, the sponsor thinks it does. And sometimes I think it has the ability to lead to a better outcome before an ordinance is introduced. Because as you all very well know, once it is introduced, that puts on a very formal path, and changing it is not easy, I think, in a practical sense. It takes substitute ordinance or amendments, floor amendments. And so I think it's more of a proactive approach to have that addressed at the outset. So again, I disagree that there's any effect whatsoever on separation of powers. It has been in place for quite some time, for decades. I get that just because something's been in place for a long time, that doesn't necessarily mean it should remain forever. But I still, in seeking to figure out what problem this draft ordinance seeks to fix and what it seeks to accomplish. I guess I would just, suggest to you all that we think that what's in place now works. It gives the administration the ability to work with the sponsors before something's introduced. And enables prompts a little more of a proactive approach. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hall. Anybody else, Tara?
Smiley.
And George.
All right, I see Mr. Smiley and Mr. Carter. Mr. Smiley.
Yep. Like always, I'm going to reserve my position until the roll call on the night of council, but I just want to make an observation that I'm sure, you know, people are going to shake their heads and say, why is he saying it? But I think it, for those out there that are listening that aren't aware, that don't follow council, one of the things that strikes me in listening to these conversations going on is that may be lost in the mix is that council's legislation for introduction is out there 7 days prior to the date it's going to be even introduced. So if there is a land use piece that's going to be introduced without having gone to land use under the current process, there's still 7 days for land use to take a look at and reach out to that sponsor if they see something that jumps out to them. So just a little observation I wanted to make, that there seems to be a week there available that gets that's being lost. Now, granted, that means that land use has to kind of monitor what's being introduced, but still, there's that window if they see something that tough or problematic to reach out to that sponsoring council member. It's up to that sponsoring council member whether to engage them, not engage them. But then you got it introduced. Then you got 2 more weeks, if not, much longer. It's still going through the rest of the process. So I just think we shouldn't lose sight of that first week that's there for them to look at it anyway. It's going to be out there. So that's all.
Mr. Carter?
Yeah, I just want to make sure I reiterate that this ordinance doesn't restrict a council person from working as closely as they want for months ahead of time with land use, and I fully plan to do that in many cases. But there may be times when I think significant changes are there. And to tell me that, well, it's the way it's been for 20 years, that's not really as heartening to me, because I think we should evolve. I mean, separate for equal was on the books for 60 years, and introduction should have been introduced in the first minute to remove that. You know, so there may be cases where we want to change things and, you know, the bureaucracy is slow to move. And I just want to reserve that right as a legislator to move it and move it independently if I feel it necessary.
Mr. Hollins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The fact that the UDC has not, this particular part of it has not been changed. There has been numerous changes to the UDC. There will continue to be changes to the UDC. So the UDC is not a perfect document. If the truth be told, council members don't always get cooperation from various departments within the executive branch of government. If the executive branch of government is not supportive of a piece of legislation, and that's the case right today, I can tell you, along with the co-chair, along with council by council, that cooperation is not always there. If it's something that the executive branch is not supportive of, it is not forthcoming. Those are the facts that I live with as a legislator, and I can give you other examples. I don't want to bore you with all of that, but there's absolutely nothing wrong with the county council having this opportunity without having some pre-introduction submission that is, quite frankly, an encroachment that should not be there. And I'm trusting that enough councilors will see it as that. And as I said earlier, for those council members who like it the way it is, it's not taking anything away from you. But what I'm experiencing right now in this government is that we don't always get that cooperation. And as long as the government has that ability to do that, they will continue to do it, whether it be getting something as simple as a fiscal note or getting information documentation to verify numbers. It's not always forthcoming. This impediment has no rational reason for being there to require a legislative body to get some pre-approval or some whatever you may want to call it, from any branch, whether it be community services, public safety, or land use. So to try to defend this, to me, it's just, there's no defense for this being there. It's not an error. It's there purposely there, like other things, like what Councilman Cartier alluded to earlier. There was one point in time where county council did in fact approve the county attorney, only to have the county executive run down to Dover and get the legislators to change that, to take that away from the legislative branch of government. It's always, in my opinion, my experience, that it has been an attempt to take power away from the executive branch, and it's always seemingly the case that they're able to get away with it. So I again applaud Councilman Carter for doing what he's doing, and I'm going to again support it at our very next meeting. Thank you very much, and I'm pretty much done.
Mr. Smiley.
One quick observation, and then I'm done. This is nothing new to those of us who've been around on council, especially Councilman Hollins, who's been there much longer than the rest of us. It wasn't all that many years ago when finance was having problems getting fiscal notes and things out of an administration, and we went and we adjusted the rules and requirements that gave them a deadline, and if they didn't meet it, we could do our own fiscal note. So there are various times, as you said, dealing with various departments, various individuals in the county government that has caused us to move forward to make changes. And we always recognize that if, when we make those changes down the road, we see where it's bootstrapping county government, it's not working, then we go back and visit to try to see what we can do together to make it work. Simple as that. This is nothing new to what council's acted on before. When we felt that we needed to make changes in order for us to keep what we wanted to do as a separate body of government moving forward.
Thank you, Tara. I think we were in public comments. Is there any other? Are there any other public comments that you see?
No further public comment.
Thank you. And I don't see any further council comment. Am I correct?
Correct.
Okay, then we will move on to other. Any comments under other? Tara, you don't see anything? Tara, you don't see anything?
No, Woods? I do not.
Okay, Mr. Woods, did you have
your
hand
up? No, I do not.
Okay, Mr. Woods, did you have your hand up?
No, I'm good.
Okay. All right, we'll move on to public comment. I guess we've kind of covered that. I'm getting reverberation here.
Reverberate a motion to adjourn.
Do I have a second? All in favor? Anybody opposed?
Aye.
We are adjourned. Thank you so much. Have a good evening.
Thank you.